In the great halls of USA Today, we assemble the newsroom's mightiest nerds. Brett Molina.
I'm so sorry for the producer of this podcast.
Kelly Lawler.
I will fight you on it.
Brian Truitt.
Spoiler town!
Together, they form the Mothership. Their mission? To harness their collective encyclopedic knowledge of nerdiness in all its forms. To dissect every trailer, plot twist, and game released for the geekiest of fans. The Mothership, saving the universe from bad comic book adaptations every Friday.
All aboard the Mothership, the Geek Culture Podcast from the USA Today Network. Thanks for joining us. Happy Friday, everybody.
Happy Friday.
Let's meet the crew. I'm Brett Molina. I cover video games, and my biggest Oscar snub is Crazy Rich Asians. I'm really surprised that they didn't get nominated for anything, considering how much people talked about that movie.
I'm Kelly Lawler. I'm a TV critic, and the Oscar snub I'm angriest about is Won't You Be My Neighbor for the documentary category. These people not have souls?
I know, right? It's terrible. Brian is off this week. Brian, well wishes. See you next week.
Hi, Brian. Bye, Brian.
If this is your first time listening to us, welcome. New episodes of The Mothership drop every Friday, and you can subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you like to listen. While you're on Apple Podcasts, we would really love it if you would write a quick review about the show, because you help other fans who love nerdy pop culture find us. And as a bonus, we give you a shout out on the next episode. So everybody wins. It's great. Don't forget, along with leaving a review, you can get in touch with us on Twitter. We're at Mothership Pod. You can email us too at mothershippod@usatoday.com. Contrary to what you may believe based on the intro, we're not going to talk about the Oscars. We're going to talk about the polar opposite, TV.
Woohoo!
Yes. All of the Oscars are on TV, but still, anyway. A few weeks ago, we previewed the biggest movies that will be gracing the big screen. Now we're going to talk about the small screen. It's also a good time to talk about 2019 TV, because Kelly is headed to Los Angeles next week to attend the Television Critics Association press tour to learn about what's coming on our TVs later
18
this year.
18 days! 18 days in a hotel. It's going to be so exciting.
Now, you have done one of these already.
Yes.
That was your first one, I think,
yes,
right?
My first one was this past summer. In July and August. That one was only 16 days. That was nothing.
So, okay. First impressions as someone who went for the first time. What was it like?
Exhausting. Lots of information in a very short period of time. But, you know, it was really fun. I got to meet a lot of like-minded people who love television. I got to learn about things that I definitely wouldn't have been able to pay as much attention to otherwise. Or probably wouldn't have paid as much attention to otherwise based on my own personal biases. For instance, I got very excited about The Masked Singer based on the panel they held, and just knowing about a new singing reality competition from a press release would not have really jazzed me about it. And maybe I'm basic because I really like it, but I'll own it.
Well, there you go. Now, it's not just new shows that we're going to be talking about and we have to look forward to. The streaming game is about to get a lot more interesting. A lot of big players coming in like Apple, Disney, Warner Brothers. I know. We already have Netflix, Hulu, and Amazon. We have a lot of lesser-known stuff like DC Universe, BritBox, Acorn TV, Crackle. I mean, this, I don't even think peak TV is the right word. It's way beyond that now. There's just too much.
Is it? It's like, what's a word for a sustained period that's the day the stock market crashed in 1929? Like, what's that word? Or the day before the stock market crashed in 1929?
I have no idea.
I don't know, man. It's crazy.
So clearly it's going to be a really interesting year for TV. So that's what we're going to talk about. So you talked about your experience, but let's dig in more to what TCA is. What exactly goes on during this thing?
So it's essentially like an 18-day long press conference or a con for journalists only. Essentially, you sit in this hotel ballroom. You go there every day. And the TV networks and streaming services parade their talent for you. And they do a panel and ask questions and tell you about their show. And then the next one comes. So it's a very singular experience. It's kind of like when you were in elementary school and like your teachers came to you, like you sat in the same classroom all day and like maybe sometimes you did music or something. And like they feed you. It's this weird experience. You almost never leave the hotel. Like you do some set visits and stuff and there are some parties. And it's every day for... Well, it's 16 days of programming and then 2 days of travel for me. So it's crazy. It's like really exciting at first, and then burnout starts to hit in. It's like, if I don't like the shows that are debuted on the last day, Amazon is, you know, doing their stuff on the last day. Like, I'm sorry, Amazon, but like, you made that life choice. You decided to keep me from being home on Valentine's Day.
That's messed up.
Also, my fiance's birthday.
Wow, that's a double. Oh, my goodness. So now, when you're approaching this, do you try to keep it like straight TV journalists reporting on things? Do you allow yourself moments to kind of like, oh, I can't believe I'm seeing this, or I can't believe I've seen this person in, you know, in real life?
Over the summer, we got to go to the set of Runaways, and I got to take a picture with the dinosaur, and like, that was pretty great. but I mean, it's the starstruckness. I think, A, we're all journalists, and so we're a little jaded in that way. And then B, there's just so many of them. It's like, you don't have time. Like, oh, hi, Julia Roberts. Bye, Julia Roberts. Like, it's
it just happens.
It just is. You have to make sure you got down her quote, really. Like, because, you know, we're like reporting in real time. It's just, there's no time to record anything. You're just like, I did our favorite thing on this podcast where I made a gesture.
Yes,
on
you
a podcast.
Did. She was gesturing that she was typing on a keyboard.
I was the Kermit typewriter gif in real life. But so, I mean, it is cool. It's really cool to see these people make themselves available to, like, I don't know, 120 or more journalists in a room for however long. Over the summer, it happened during the Les Moonves story. It broke while we were all there when CBS's press day was coming up. And most networks will often do this thing called an executive session where someone very high up, the president, the head of programming, will just sit there and answer your questions. And they'll talk about long-term projects. They'll talk about company culture. They'll talk about lots of things. And so to CBS's credit, after the Les Moonves story broke, they put their executive out in front of all these people to have questions asked. And, you know, we asked really hard questions about how this happened at CBS, you know, how all these allegedly bad things could still flourish. What's their human resources situation? You know, Bobby Brown was there to promote some TV movie about himself, and someone asked him about domestic abuse allegations against Whitney Houston. Like, it's real stuff. But then also sometimes people just ask who's going to guest star in Arrow this year. So like, it really runs the gamut. It's emotional really whiplash.
Yeah, I can imagine. So what show are you most excited to see or hear more about?
I think it's a toss-up between What We Do in the Shadows, which is coming to FX. It's an adaptation of the seminal vampire mockumentary from Taika Waititi, who we've talked about a lot on this podcast. He directed Thor Ragnarok, and Jemaine Clement of Flight of the Conchords. If you haven't seen it, watch it. It's kind of hard to describe. It's kind of like, what if vampires existed in real life and they were a bunch of dirtbags? Like, you know, they were all boys. Sorry. sorry to our producer. Like, they weren't so much evil as they were douches.
I guess Dice isn't the only one who curses on this show.
Miss you, Brian. So it's being adapted. I'm really interested to see how that's going to happen. In the movie, Jemaine and Taika are in it. They're not in the TV show, but they are working on it. And I love FX. They're the home of my faves, The Americans. So I have high hopes. The other thing I'm most excited about for next year is Good Omens, which is coming to Amazon, which is an adaptation of one of my favorite books of all time by Terry Pratchett and Neil Gaiman. I'm pretty sure I've talked on this podcast before about how much I love Terry Pratchett.
And I think Neil talked about it during an episode of a while back.
Yeah. Friend of the podcast, Neil Gaiman. Let's just say that as often as possible. Friend of the podcast. If you've ever read either of those authors, this book is such a pure distillation of the two of them. Sometimes you can totally tell who wrote what. For example, the horror sequences were written by Neil Gaiman. But anyway, it's a book about the end of the world, about the apocalypse, and there's God, and there's devil, and there's demons, and there's angels, and there's the Antichrist. And it's incredibly funny. It's very irreverent. It's going to require insane special effects if they go in that direction. David Tennant, a fave. Martin Sheen, a fave, are starring as the two, as the devil and the angel, respectively. We've seen a trailer. I think they debuted it at New York Comic Con, but we don't have a release date yet. And I'm not even sure if they're paneling it because Amazon hasn't released their schedule, but I feel like they have to, like, logically speaking, they would. So, I mean, anything about that, like, I'm going to be so heartbroken if it's bad, but Neil told us he was working on it when he was on the podcast. And how could you mess up source material as pure as that, says the girl who watched Runaways collapse in front of her.
Very optimistic of you. So it's interesting because we can't talk a ton about 2019 shows because there's not a lot of information on this stuff.
You know, this stuff happens way faster on shorter production schedules than movies. So movies, you plan this stuff out years in advance. TV, you're like, oh, maybe we can drop it in March. Maybe we want to do April. Who cares? Like, we all heard about the final season of Jane the Virgin premiering in March a few days ago. And we've been waiting since last year. So,
yeah. So if you had to pick one show that you're generally most excited for this year, what would it be?
I think I have to talk about Game of Thrones here. Excited is not the right word for my emotions surrounding the show. They're complicated.
It feels like a roller coaster.
And filled with anxiety and fear and trepidation. Because, you know, sometimes I think, hey, would I have a job if I hadn't read the Game of Thrones books in high school?
So this is a shorter season too, right? I think we get six episodes.
Okay. They're going to be long based on all reporting that we've seen, possibly feature length, kill me now. They have a lot of stuff to pack in. We've seen a millisecond of footage in a trailer that HBO wasn't really a trailer. It was an ad for HBO in general. And so they had clips from lots of their shows and like a little second of Game of Thrones. You see Daenerys meet Sansa. Sansa goes, Winterfell is yours. Cue theories. I mean, I am excited. I am excited to see how HBO ends this. I feel like I've finally come to a place as a book fan where I see them as complete separate entities. So it's not like I'm going to be spoiled for the books. You know, this was an ambitious project, to say the least. And they've done really amazing things. They've done some crap stuff. But they've done some really amazing things and they've made some really good television. And I hope that, the better angels win out for the last season. I mean, it's pretty much in the can. They're probably just doing post-production at this point. I'm really glad I didn't pick April 13th as my wedding date. It was in the running for a while. That's all I got to say about that.
This is a very big year for Kelly.
It's a very big year for me. I mean, I don't really sleep when Game of Thrones is on the air. This is why I have such mixed feelings about it. It's hard for me to enjoy watching it, but I can appreciate it.
Well, there you go. My show that I'm very excited for is Stranger Things Season 3, which debuts on July 4th. I still remember binging it last year, and maybe the year before. But I just remember being like, I need more of this. I want 10 seasons of Stranger Things.
What? Absolutely love you like Stranger Things, Brett? I've never heard you talk about it.
I know, never. It's the first time, really. Nobody's known this. So, you know, I love the setting for it where it looks like it's going to be based around this mall that's just opened downtown. I think it's like 1985 or something like that. But it also looks like, you know, they just released some teasers and then they have the new poster where it's like you kind of see the upside down and the main character. I think it was the Mind Flayer was the season two villain in that one. But just you see that in the background. It looks really good. I'm really excited for it. I can't wait. I've been looking forward to this for the longest time. So I just want to see them all. That's all I care about right now.
From the press release that came attached with the date announcement, what I know is that it's going to be hormonal. You know, they said that like the teen relationships and the supernatural collide or something like that, probably a little more elegant than what I just said. and that poster shows all of them coupled off, including Mike at 11 as the monster is creeping upon them.
All I care about for this season is please give Will like a break. Make him some kind of like guide for Upside Down or something.
Send him to space camp, the poor kid.
Yeah. Send him for the summer away in Florida or something. But just don't leave him alone, please. So that gets us to another interesting angle here with TV, which is all the streaming services. The biggest one is obviously Disney, which is going to have a ton of stuff between all the standard Disney stuff that they do with Disney Channel and all the movies, but then you also have Marvel and you have Star Wars. They still haven't given any of the details about when that comes out or price or anything like that. You also have Warner Media, which owns Turner and HBO, and they have lots of their own stuff. Then you have companies like Apple and Amazon who own all the platforms we stream stuff from, like Apple TV or the Fire and stuff like that. And they want to introduce their own streaming service of some kind. So it's going to get really interesting. I think this is like the year of we figure out who survives and who doesn't because there's just so much stuff out there.
Absolutely. You know, we talk about the term peak TV, which was coined by FX executive John Landgraf, I want to say in 2014. And he thought that as the TV stage was built in 2014, which seems laughably small now, that in the next few years there was going to be a bubble burst, like the dot-com burst, etc. And he predicted it sooner than, like, we're still going. It hasn't burst yet. But I think the first death knell in it is You on Netflix. You, if you've never heard of it, is a great show that I absolutely adore that no one watched when I reviewed it in September because it aired on Lifetime. It's a show that stars Penn Badgley from Gossip Girl, and he plays a stalker, and you, from his point of view, you see him stalk and manipulate his way into the life of this girl, and it's really, it's like a satire of romantic comedies where guys do all these horrible things, but we think they're great. Anyway, the point is that it was completely ignored, and then it went on Netflix in December.
And it's blown up.
It blew up. And Netflix started treating it like an original because they eventually, Lifetime gave season two to Netflix, like, to debut as an original. And it's completely blown up. I mean, we don't get ratings from Netflix, but there was a great article in The Ringer that showed the Google search trends and compared You Lifetime to You Netflix. And I mean, the results were staggering. And you've seen all the memes. You've seen unfortunate women romanticizing Penn Badgley's character. It's really bad. Don't do it, guys.
I've seen some people talk about how it almost mirrors real life, just as far as like some of that stuff.
I mean, it's a very good portrayal of social media.
Yeah.
In a way that is not like baby boomers trying to be cool, but more like other millennials showing how toxic it is. I have to credit my friend Daniel Daddario, who is the TV critic for Variety, who tweeted like a thought that I wish I had had first, but I totally agree with, that the You phenomenon was the first, you know, death knell for cable TV. Basic cable is going to die. And this is the first real piece of evidence to show that it's going to happen. Because what should Lifetime do now? You know, they thought they had something great. They actually renewed You for a second season before it debuted. They were really confident in it. And I mean, they had every right to be. It was a great show. It was from Greg Berlanti, who's done Riverdale, all the CW superhero shows. He's got a great track record. From Sarah Gamble, who worked on The Magicians on Sci-Fi, which is actually doing well on cable. So they had a really great show. It kind of reminds you of a Lifetime movie, kind of writ large, with all the seediness. And, you know, the young white blonde girl who doesn't know that she's in trouble. You know what I mean? Like, so they tried. They tried their absolute best to get a show that they thought would, like, bring people who like serialized programming to them. And here's empirical evidence that it was a great show, but no one cared that it was on Lifetime. It's crazy. What do they do next? What do their programming executives decide to do now? More movies? More 90 Day Fiancé? That doesn't air on Lifetime.
I think it's TLC.
Yep.
I'm sorry, I know that. I know my wife watches
whatever. They have
Fiancé,
something similar.
So, yeah.
But yeah, it sucks. So, you know, I think I keep talking about the coming streaming wars, and I don't know who's going to lose from a streaming standpoint, but the loser, no matter what, will be basic cable. It's going to go. It's going to go in not that many years.
Here's the thing with cable. I've had this personal experience too, because I cut completely off cable TV too. One of their biggest issues is that A, you get a ton of these extra channels you don't want, but they also tack on all this extra stuff too, like fees. Like, you have to pay for a cable box and you have to pay for this other stuff. These are things you can get a Roku and it's done, and you don't have to worry about that other stuff. You're paying straight for the TV. There's so much extra added on stuff with cable, and I think that's what's why nobody cares about any of this stuff. The other thing I think that's hurting too is the channels that are only available in a small amount of services. I think of Viacom channels, for example, or even Lifetime. You know, I think the reason why people don't discover it is because everyone that's cutting the cord doesn't, oh, we don't have Lifetime on our plan? I guess we can live without it. And I think it's a sacrifice people are okay with as long as they get their core stuff. And I think it's going to be a really interesting thing is those channels that can you still remain among the core for viewers that are like, okay, I need to have this channel for this package. And what channels are going to make that cut and what don't?
You know, I think it's interesting because Netflix just raised its prices.
Yes.
And lots of people cut the cord for many reasons. I think there's a whole other side to it of like how Gen Z is growing up with their experience of television being whatever they want, whenever they want, for however long they want it. Which is just completely different from like my experience growing up, where even though it was a rerun on TNT, I had to be home by 5 p.m. every day so I could watch Charmed. You know what I mean? And that I did my homework during the commercials. That's not an experience of any middle schooler anymore. And I think that generational shift is going to have a big impact on it over time. For right now, Gen Z kids aren't making buying decisions in their households. So I do think the fact that streaming services are getting more expensive and there's going to be more of them is going to start to wiggle the market a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. And I get why Netflix raised prices. I mean, it's still very popular and they're spending a ton of money on programming.
What?
I know.
$8 billion? That's nothing.
That's a drop in the bucket. It's got to come from somewhere. So I'm not surprised. But then again, I think all this coming together with these streaming services that are going to be raising prices and then new competition comes in, it's going to be really interesting to see who goes above the fold. I think it's always going to end up to who has the best content and who has the most programming that you really want. And I think that's where like a Disney has an edge and Netflix has an edge now because they have so much more stuff now. And even places like Hulu, where it's like just you have so much TV right there from network. That's, you know, it's an obvious choice to also.
Yeah, I think for a while, because Netflix broke so big with House of Cards initially, and then Hulu did the same with The Handmaid's Tale, people thought the best method was to get that one show that people would subscribe for. And it still works sort of in a grandfathered way. Like, I think people are holding on to HBO to wait for the final season of Game of Thrones, and then maybe they might, you know, duck out. I think hardcore Star Trek fans are still doing CBS All Access when Star Trek Discovery is in season. Probably they cancel in between. I'm not going to lie. But now I think with all this competition, it's going to be quantity. Because you can't, you know, if you like one show on each, it's not going to be worth it from a monetary perspective to get them all. So you could sacrifice The Good Fight. I love The Good Fight. It's way more worth getting CBS All Access for that than for Star Trek, which I also really like. Anyways. But Netflix and Disney are going to have the biggest archives, hands down. Hulu and Amazon have been working to get older stuff. Amazon just announced that they're getting Baywatch. You know what I mean? And I think those are really big draws for people. I think when Netflix loses The Office, and they will, one day they will, because when their contract is up with Netflix, Universal Television isn't going to want to resell it. They're going to want to put it on Hulu, where they can get both sides of the money.
Yep, and they get the ads too, because that's another big thing with Hulu. Amazon, I think, is going to be interesting only because, you know, a big reason why a lot of people, I think, are on Prime is because of the Prime subscription, where you get all the shipping and all the other stuff. And what I'd be interested to see is if they kind of dive deeper and try this new live streaming subscription, do they bundle that with Prime and say, hey, for an extra $10 a year on Prime, you can have basically your own cable package.
Yeah, it's crazy that Amazon has potentially the widest user base of all of them, but their UX on their streaming service is terrible. If you guys don't know, Tech Talk UX is user experience.
Yes.
And actually at TCA over the summer, the execs from Amazon were like, yeah, we know, we're working on it. So I don't know when they're debuting something new. I mean, it depends on what device you're using. It's like iTunes on Apple TV. It's horrible on desktop. Horrible. It's very hard to find what you were already watching on desktop, I think, is the biggest problem with it. But anyway, I think it makes discovery really hard on there. So people don't really wander over there. And validly, when they go to Amazon.com, Amazon wants them to buy stuff.
Yes.
So that's the trade-off. Like, from a prioritizing standpoint, what does Amazon value as a company? Although Bezos wants Game of Thrones, so they spent $200-some million on the rights to make a Lord of the Rings show. But whatever, it's fine. It's going to be terrible.
Now, that's another interesting thing you bring up, though, because Netflix is really good at like unearthing the stuff that you might like, and they have a really good system for figuring that out. I know Disney, a while back, they purchased the streaming tech that was used by the MLB Network. And so that was really good. It was universally praised. It was really good. And it seemed like a big deal. And I think that's going to, you know, obviously fuel this new service they have. And I think that's another reason why, you know, not just looking at the stuff they're going to have, but I think the tech behind it might be good enough where, you know, it's definitely going to be up near the top. The interesting thing is going to be price-wise what it's going to be. I'm thinking it's going to be close to HBO, like $15 a month maybe, but we'll see.
Yeah. I mean, the prices are going to get out of the control. It's also going to see what the race looks like. None of the forthcoming streaming services have announced dates for any of the programming that they have announced that is in development. Apple has signed deals with like 20,000 different people. And like a little part of me believes they're never going to create television. They just took Reese Witherspoon off the market. Like, truly.
Do something.
Like, all I ever hear is, like, Apple TV signs X, Apple TV signs X. And I'm like, really? Oh, great. Are they going to make shows? Is the iPad going to make the show?
Well, the one thing I've learned about Apple just from iPhone and iPad and all that stuff is they tend to take their time introducing stuff. So they tend not to rush to market right away. So this could be part of it. They're just trying to take their time or figure out, you know, deals and stuff like that.
Yeah. I think they'll probably go first. And then I think Disney's going to launch in the fall once their big movies are done. Hopefully that they will have better coordination between their TV and film ends than currently Marvel Studios and Marvel TV has, and Walt Disney Pictures and ABC currently have.
Yeah.
Because it's not great. And they could utilize each other better. Look at me. I'm arguing for corporate synergy. Just stop sending all your sitcom families to Disney World, ABC. Everyone knows it's a stupid ham episode.
Tell us how you really feel.
Listen, I got fired up.
So who do you think is going to win all this streaming stuff?
I think Netflix is going to win. I think they have the deepest pockets, although I don't really know where the money comes from. I think their power is unprecedented. You know, I talked about You. Another example that I saw recently is the Marie Kondo show. She had a best-selling book, The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up. It's been out for years. But once her Netflix show debuted, I looked at the Google Trends data, searches for her went through the roof. You know, she was already famous. Netflix made her 10 times, that's not the actual number, but a lot of times more famous. It's just crazy. The big competitor for Netflix, I think, is Disney. I think if anyone has the ability to knock Netflix down, so to speak, it's Disney, who also has deep pockets and they have a really deep library. And I think that really helps. And they have a lot of brand loyalty. Netflix has brand loyalty, I think, because of convenience, because it was the first. So people already had it. So they weren't going to go out and get something new. But Disney is worth signing up for.
Plus they have, I mean, for parents, like it's almost going to be an automatic at some point. You know, if they have all the, like if they have all the Disney collection and they have all these other shows, like it's almost a no-brainer.
And Netflix does have kids programming, but I would say that honestly, Amazon of all places is doing the best of kids programming in terms of quality and quantity. Basic Cable's going to lose. Basic Cable's gone 5 years. I'm being crazy. Since we're doing wild speculation here, I'm just going to say it. 5 years where people are, it's not going to be like gone, but some channels are going to start closing over the next 5 years. And cable companies are going to start offering packages with basic cable and premium. And that's it. I think so. And then basic cable goes next, but they'll just fold into their corporate parents and be part of their streaming services. Same with premium cable. There you go.
It's going to get ugly.
Don't forget that Disney owns Fox. Guys, we forgot about that. But seriously, speaking of that, I mean, however you feel personally about the man, Rupert Murdoch isn't dumb. And when he said that he's going to turn his stuff into sports and news, I don't think he's wrong about the future of live television. Not like live, like the Oscars. I just mean like television that isn't on demand, streamed to you.
Yeah, exactly. I think there's still room for that, definitely. Okay, let's wrap up by talking about the Fyre Festival, because of all the things that have been coming out on TV this month, this is the one that's fascinated a lot of people. We had two competing documentaries on Fyre Festival, one that ran on Netflix, one that ran on Hulu.
The opening gambit of the streaming wars.
Yes.
I don't know.
Both very interesting in their own way. Netflix was more of, definitely felt like a more of an inside look, which makes sense because the media company that managed Fyre Festival's social presence also did this documentary.
Produced the documentary.
What a coincidence. Hulu's definitely felt more independent and was kind of an outsider looking in.
Gave more context.
Yes. So as far as these two feuding Fyre Festival docs, what did you think?
I liked Hulu's better, although I do think that your opinion on the documentaries probably rests a lot on which one you watched first. I watched Hulu first. Hulu also surprise dropped theirs a few days before Netflix was set to debut theirs, which had been advertised for many months, which I think is an amazing flex. I love it. I mean, as scary as the streaming wars coming are, I also think they're hilarious. And there's going to be a lot of weird stuff like that happening.
We're all going to win, though.
We're all going to win. Hopefully. I'm going to lose.
You're not going to have a lot of time.
But I liked that the Hulu doc went and talked more about like influencer culture. And it showed the the sort of bigger picture around everything happening. Netflix is good as like a TikTok, like you were saying, like an inside look. It's like, here's how from A to B to Z things happened over the course of the months that led up to the festival. Hulu's is way more indicting of the people involved, very specifically Jerry Media, and kind of calls them out for producing their own documentary about it, and has a dissenter from Jerry Media as their source. While Netflix obviously has a lot of people from Jerry Media to talk. And I also think Netflix displays it more as like a misguided idea by unprepared individuals, and Hulu's is more this was a criminal act.
Well, the interesting thing about the Netflix one is it felt like the main guy that started this whole Fyre Festival idea, he was the central guy and nobody knew anything. And so mm-hmm. everybody was blindsided and everyone was just taking orders from this guy and had no...
They were trying so hard.
Personal agency to say, I'm quitting, I'm out of here, or I need to stop this or anything. It was just, they kind of went along with it and, you know, just to see what happens. So for those of you who don't remember the debacle that was the Fyre Festival, this was supposed to be, the documentary's focus on this, what was supposed to be kind of a Coachella type concert event.
For rich people.
For rich people. And it was going to happen on a small island in the Bahamas. And so what ends up happening is it ends in disaster. All the people that end up on the island, you know, they were told they were going to have villas on the beach and they were going to have these, incredible accommodations, and they were going to meet with the celebrities and it was going to be this crazy big Coachella experience. And you talk with models and you swam with pigs and all this other crazy stuff. And then it turns out they get there and they're like in these small little tents.
FEMA tents.
They're getting served like just white bread with cheese and some crazy lunch stuff.
Porta potties, no showers.
Yeah, and it's just a disaster. And people can't get out because the airport is so small and they can only take so many people. Like, they were literally trapped on the island. So
they didn't have accommodations for the number of people they sold tickets for. They sold tickets for villas and houses that didn't exist.
It was very Lord of the Flies. It was
crazy.
They
made people put money on this bracelet for, like, a cashless experience. It was crazy.
So that's what these documentaries looked at, was inside the debacle. I honestly came away from it feeling sorry for almost no one. The only people I really felt bad for were the workers in the Bahamas,
because
they got completely hosed. They spent all this time working all hours of the day and they never got paid.
And like a local restaurant is in debt because of it, because yeah. She paid the workers. And
there was another guy who had to leave because he was getting hounded by people that wanted money for their work and he couldn't pay him because there was no money. And it was just like, you felt terrible for these people. But, you know, everybody else, it was kind of like, there were some people at Fyre I felt kind of bad for, because there was the company was working on an app while they were also doing the festival. So from the way the Netflix doc sounded, it seemed those employees were shielded from what happened with Fyre Festival and had no clue. And I think there was one employee who actually had this huge credit card debt because the guy who organized it, Billy McFarland,
used his credit card
and racked up an insane amount of debt. So that's, yeah, but it's...
Anyway,
fascinating.
This show is kind of the cool thing about this like huge proliferation of content, is that like I actually think they're really interesting in conversation with each other, showing different aspects of this thing, giving you a fuller picture, and you know, they wouldn't exist. That's the thing. It's going to be overwhelming and there's going to be so much mediocre crap in all these streaming stuff, but there's going to be really interesting stuff that wouldn't exist otherwise, and I love art, so.
It weirdly reminded me in TV wise of, you remember when the whole Amy Fisher thing went down and like every network on the planet had their own series or kind of based on a true story movie about what happened? Am I totally going way over your head because you're...
Who's Amy Fisher?
Oh my God, I can't believe this. I wish Brian were here because he'd know this. But there was this big story in the 90s about this girl, Amy Fisher, and she was having an affair with this guy and she became obsessed. The way they made it sound is she became obsessed with him and shot his wife. So I think every network had their own based on a true story film about her. And like there were three different actresses. I think Alyssa Milano played one and then there were two. Like it was crazy. Like it was just every network had their own version of that movie. That's the first thing I thought of with the Fyre Festival stuff. And like maybe Amazon or Cartoon Network will have their own Fyre Festival thing. Like, I don't know. It's wild. But anyway.
I would love a Cartoon Network Fyre Festival documentary.
I'd be fantastic. I would absolutely dig it. I just want more Fyre Festival
Seth
documentaries.
Seth Green could make it.
Robot, yeah, like a robot chicken kind of thing. Yeah, I just want more Fyre Fest docs, honestly. That's just so fascinating. It's just crazy. We should stop there.
And this is how we designed a whole podcast so that Brett could talk about the Fyre Festival.
The end. Listeners, okay, it's your turn. What TV shows are you excited to see in 2019? Are you excited for any of the new streaming services coming out? How much money do you want to spend on TV? The whole point of these services was we'd save money, but how far are you willing to go? Plus, are there any shows that you really want to know about when Kelly goes to LA that you want to hear more details on? Maybe you can let us all know. We are on Twitter at Mothership Pod. You can also tweet at us individually. I'm at Brett Molina 23.
I'm at Kalawls, K-L-A-W-L-S.
And don't forget, you can email us too. We're at mothershippod@usatoday.com.
And Brian is at Brian Truitt.
Sorry, Brian.
Wow.
Dice, my bad.
The diss.
I know. The dice diss. We're going to wrap it up here. Thanks so much for listening. Special thanks to our pilots / producers of The Mothership, Shannon Green and Natalie Boyd. If you like the podcast and don't want to miss an episode moving forward, you can subscribe to The Mothership for free on Apple Podcasts. While you're there, how about leaving us a rating or a review? It helps other people find the show. But if Apple Podcasts isn't your thing, you can find us on SoundCloud, Stitcher, anywhere you listen to podcasts. Kelly, we're going to miss you the next 3 weeks. Don't forget about us. I'll try not to
in the 75 degree weather.
Is there a special reference I need to make each week so that your presence is always here on the show?
Just talk about Doctor Who each week.
Okay, we'll make a Doctor Who reference every week until she's
back. Thank you.
There we go. That'll do it until next Friday. Nerds out.
See ya.